Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Pure Dog Talk is brought to you today by PetMate Plastic Dog Crates, trusted providers of safety and comfort for your dog. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and I am honored to be able to present for you guys today this excerpt of the presentation entitled Standards, Interpreting Them, Understanding Them, and Applying Them. This was generously provided by Nanette Newbury. She is Judges Education Chair for the United States Australian Shepherd Association. This is part of a presentation that she gave at the USASA National at Purina Farms in April of this year. She's talking specifically about the Australian Shepherd Standard, but the information that she's providing about what makes a good standard and what's open to interpretation and what's not, all of this information is absolutely applicable in all of our breeds. So take a listen. I think you'll really, really enjoy what Nanette has to say, and she gives it to you in a pretty straight up and straightforward fashion. So hope you have a good time with this one.
Hi, my name's Nanette Newbury. I'm a member of USASA. I'm a breeder, owner, handler. My handling days are getting numbered. I'm also the judge's education coordinator for the breed, and I'm probably the breed's biggest fan next to you guys. So I want to thank you all for being here at Nationals. I want to thank you for your kind comments for the previous seminars that we've done. How many of you were here last night for Carmen's? How many of you, when he started talking about our breed and he said, you should know this proportion for your breed, how many of you were waiting for him to tell you what that proportion, well, what is it? Okay, well, that's what we're going to do today. So we're going to go a little bit further on that. It's very interactive. If you have questions, you stop me. I am not trying to teach you what the breed standard looks like. What we're going to explore today is what are the parts of a standard, what's a good breed standard, consequently what's a bad breed standard, and have you start analyzing what's good about our breed standard. How many of you think and have heard the term, it's open to interpretation? Sort of like Carmen said last night, it sort of means they don't know what they're talking about. I don't mean that literally, but what I'm saying is how much of our standard really is open to interpretation? How much of the breed standard is open for interpretation? That's what we're going to look at today, page by page. So when we call for parallel head planes, is that open to interpretation?
No.
There's parallel and there's not parallel. So that would be an area that's not open. So we're going to start opening your minds. I'm not going to tell you what they are. You're going to develop your own mind for what's open to interpretation in our standard and what isn't. The other interesting thing is breeders use the standard one way, judges have to use it another. So how many of you have come out of a ring or watched your dog lose and you said, that judge didn't know what he's doing, and he put up a dog that wasn't sound. My dog's sounder than that judge. He doesn't know what he's doing. Okay, I'm there. What I learned over time was that that judge had to weigh a lot more than soundness. We focus on soundness because it's a hallmark of our breed and we demand it. But what good is it if it looks like a coyote and it's sound? So we have to marry breed type with that. We have to marry a level top line. A soundness is one big package. Is it mentally sound? Is it physically sound? So the judges can only go by what's in the breed standard, and we're going to talk about that in a second. So for today, active participation. If you have a question, if we have too many questions, obviously we can't finish. What I want you to come out with by the end of the seminar is I want you to recognize our different parts of our standard. I want you to know what identifies and characterizes an excellent breed standard, because as you hopefully have other breeds or go into other breeds or judge other breeds, you're going to know the differences. The other one is you're going to learn to identify the difference between flaws, faults, and implied faults. You're going to learn how to apply it for you individually. I'm not going to tell you how to apply the breed standard. That's up for you to decide. You're going to learn the differences of how it's used by a judge or not, and you're going to learn what parts are clearly defined and what parts of our standard are truly up for interpretation on that. There's a difference on that. And hopefully we'll stir you into knowledge that you want to learn. So we have here, this is pretty important, It's essential to go back to the history and original function of the breed in order to understand the essence of that breed. It is this essence that has to be the top priority in any evaluation, breeder or judge. So we talk about this, the Bormann function, the essence. Pretty hard to define essence of a breed in a breed standard, isn't it? They're written words. Essence is sort of ethereal. So dog shows began in 1843, approximately, and they had to come up with a way to compare and contrast dogs. You just couldn't say this one's prettier, that one's darker, that one's taller, that one's smaller. Racehorse is easy. It's the one that won the race. How do you compare and contrast dogs? So they came up with a standard. We call it a blueprint. And our standard has to distinguish this breed from all other breeds. So think of a Chihuahua. When you go home, pick up another breed standard of a breed that's totally different than ours, read it, and start seeing how their standard draws a picture of a Chihuahua. Our standard clearly, kind of as you learn it and study it, defines what the Australian Shepherd should look like, act like, and move like. It can only describe the ideal and structural specimen, but we also capture character, temperament, and essence, which are difficult, and they are potentially left up to interpretation. This is one of my favorite sayings when I get wrapped up around the axle with the scientific of the breed and everything is, our breed came first, and then we wrote a standard. And I can say from experience in reading other breed standards, our founders did a heck of a job with our breed standard. They really did. There's some really excellent parts. But that's my opinion. You're going to be able to, after here, look at what parts of our standard are well-written or not, or apply or not. How many of you are novices and read that standard and it's clear as mud? No. How many, I don't know what that term is. What does that mean? It's supposed to paint a picture, that blueprint. I don't get a picture from the breed standard. Well, you're not alone. They're not written for novices. In order to read, interpret, and apply a breed standard, you have to have a skill and knowledge of canine anatomy, physiology, structure, etc., to know why we wrote it that way to end up with the movement that we did. And so you need to understand that. It takes time. There's probably many in this room. I would, Linda, you know, the dogs you started out with in the beginning, Linda, have they changed? Is it fundamentally changed over time with the breed standard? Not the breed standard changed, but how you apply it as an individual as you grow in the breed.
Well, obviously the dogs I started out with, now they've changed a lot.
Okay. But the standard hasn't changed, has it?
Yes, the standard.
Well, since you very first started, but yeah.
Because the first standard that was written for Aussies talked about them having this odd forward flip to their front leg.
She's absolutely correct.
Yeah.
It was. They rewarded that we do this paddling. The next standard said, we don't do this paddling. You're absolutely. So that's good. So it cannot contain every ideal of every dog. I mean, how can you put in writing on paper what a dog should look and act like? Let's be realistic. But we do try our best to do that. A breed standard is not a list of negative aspects. Just like we don't want to fault judge, the breed standard states what's ideal. So a really good example of this is I was studying heads and this parallel head plane sort of popped up. I'd been in the breed a while and I don't even remember that being in the breed standard. And I started looking at my dogs and they didn't have parallel planes. So I called a longtime breeder and I said, the breed standard's wrong. Aussies don't have parallel planes. They all have a slight oblique. Her response was, that's the stated ideal. And it was kind of like a moment for me in looking at dogs. If we called for an oblique head plane, guess what happens to us as people as time goes on? This happens. So by calling for parallel, we keep close. Start looking at your dog's head planes. The parallel planes are not that common, you know. And if you got one, great. It gives a look that we ask for in the breed. So we don't want to do negative. So the definition of excellent breed standards are generally one or two pages, grammatically correct, scientifically accurate. So what part of our breed standard is no longer scientifically accurate? Shoulder angulation, right angle. That would be an ideal, but what science has told us is there's truly no dog that has a 90 degree shoulder angle. So that's an aspect of it. DQs and faults are kept at a minimum. AKC controls this. Our founders did a really good job. How many DQs do we have in the breed standard? Three. Specific measurements are avoided. That would be, you know, the dog is 22 inches high, the ears are 3 inches long, the eyes are 2 inches apart, da-da-da. We don't do that, okay? We avoid complexity. As a novice, I don't think you can avoid a complexity in a breed standard, but we want to avoid being overly complex. Simple, clear language. We capture the essence. I'm not sure any breed standard does actually capture the essence. I don't know how you do that on paper. That could be me and my definitions and learning. We do describe and outline our unique breed characteristics. As we go through today, I'm going to have you guys start picking out hallmarks of our breed that make our breed distinct from any other breed on that. It always refers back to the original purpose of the dog. Every single breed standard in the world refers back to the original purpose of the dog. So, if there were only perfect animals to judge, judging would be easy. But in the real world, deciding which quality or fault is of more or less importance and awarding accordingly is the quintessential job of a judge. Imagine these Aubrey judges that we show to, that Aussie's not their breed. They have 160 other breeds, and we expect them to know what's more valuable. It's what we try and teach them here as breeder mentors, as whatever. It's a hard job. Our breed's not easy to judge overall. So this is what you do as breeders too. You pick your poison. If you can live with stifle white, do it. That's your poison to deal with. If you can live with bad fronts, that's your poison to deal with. Every breeding program has this thing I call pick their poison. So how to do that is how you weigh your faults, and judging is hard. This is something that I've referred back to a lot over here. If you got nothing out of this seminar other than this, you would be ahead of the game. The breed standard is describing the ideal. It doesn't mean your dog has it or my dog has it. It's what we describe as the ideal. Anything that deviates from the ideal is considered a fault. Anything. The degree to which it deviates the breed standard determines the severity of the fault.
Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute. Heads up, crew. Join our patrons today. Get immediate access to the support of a closed Facebook chat group, special patrons-only episodes, free mentoring sessions, and more. Just like the NPR of dogdom, Pure Dog Talk brings you the news, the knowledge, and the insight to succeed with your purebred dog. In exchange, our Pure Dog patrons share the love with monthly or annual gifts, and that helps defray the cost of overhead and sort of keeping the MP3s rolling, you know? Hit me up, laura@puredogtalk.com, and I'll hook you up with the details.
Are dirty teeth a fault?
Well, technically, yes.
Heather is being a very good sport, because last year we talked about this. It's interesting, because what does our standard say about teeth?
White, clean.
Strong? White teeth. Anything that isn't white is a fault.
How do you measure strong?
You don't.
Okay.
Well, how do you measure agility in the breed ring? I mean, you know, there's parts of the standard we cannot demonstrate. But I'm just talking about using this as an example. It's a good question. No, it is a good question. Her question is a great question, because how do you weigh that? I mean, as a breeder, it would be different than a judge, obviously. I mean, if you have a dog that has a mouthful of teeth that keep falling out or breaking when you give them a bone, you can do that at home. A judge, I'm not so sure. But in the breed ring, they're supposed to be white. If they're slightly yellow, that would be a slight deviation from the breed standard. If they're black, that would be the worst. So how judges are taught to judge your dog is the degree to which it deviates from the ideal. So the black teeth would be a more severe fault in the breed ring than a pale yellow or a little tartar spot. And I don't know any judge that's going to give you grief over a little tartar. I'm just using that as an example. But this part right here, if you get nothing else from today, this is the most important thing you could get on how we use it. So we have parts of the breed standard. So one of the things in a breed standard, we state the ideals and the virtues. Okay? So I just put some over here. Would you consider these ideals or virtues? Yes. There's more. So for your exercise with your breed standard, if you choose to play along after the seminar, go through the standard and list the virtues and ideals. Obviously, the whole standard's an ideal, but the ones that come up for you on that, this is important. So these are not listed in order of importance at all. So there's virtues that, the way we tend to look at it, if the ideal affects the original form and function of the dog, that would be more important than, let's say, something that doesn't? What would be something that, a virtue or ideal that really truly doesn't affect the dog ability to do its job? Anybody have an idea? Well, you're right, color of hair. They can still work if they're a sable or, you know, a non-recognized color, yeah. What's something else that's... Go ahead, Joyce. It's in the standard, but yeah, it's... For most of us breeders, we prefer... Yeah, absolutely. Well, ear length. So kind of fun looking at the standard going forward and pick out the ones that are right, developed, or directly affect the original form and function of the dog. Okay, this is another good one. We're probably all guilty of falling into the trap of finding faults, both as breeders and judges, because guess what? Anybody can find a fault. Anybody. The hardest thing to do when evaluating a dog, and I will tell you I am not good at it, and it takes a lot of training, is to look at a dog that is the worst example of an Australian Shepherd you've ever found and find something nice to say about it. If you learn to do it, you will be head and heels. But I can remember sitting ringside at my very first show, and I was being mentored, and all they did was they ripped every dog apart. I didn't learn. I went back to my hotel room. I was crying. I go, I'm not learning anything. It's a gift to find the virtues in an animal, and it will get you along the road on that. Every dog has faults. Every dog has flaws. Every dog. There is no such thing. So what are the stated faults in our standard? And I would tell you this is a trick question. We have no stated faults. There are none. Well, severe faults. But if you go through the standard, it gives you your severe fault. So truly, so other breed standards will say this is a fault. The white coming here is a fault. Ours does not say faults per se. How many of you heard the term implied faults? Good. I truthfully, in part of my education and growing, was not a term that I learned long ago, more recently in my knowledge and growth. I've learned more from other breed judges and breeders than I have from my own. I mean, I have a good foundation, but one of the nice things of us going into AKC is that access to all breed information from master breeders of other breeds. And what I learned is because it states the ideal, anything less than the ideal is a fault. Those are called implied faults. It doesn't say overly profuse bone or lacking bone is a fault. Does that say anywhere in our standard? But it's a fault, isn't it? Because we state the ideal. Okay, this is important for you to read through the standard and start to get an idea of what our implied faults are. I've only listed some. I gave you the dirty or missing teeth. A long muzzle, definitely. A feminine dog, we call for masculine features without being coarse on our males. Rear dew claws, if you have them. It says, this is an interesting one brought up by a judge yesterday. It says must be removed. And I'm only speaking for the U.S., yeah, for those that you can't. So we say the rear dew claws must be removed. If you find them in the ring and you're judging, what do you do with them? If it says must, doesn't it almost apply it's a DQ? Must be removed. There's no answer to it. I'm just throwing it out that this is how reading this gets tough for us, because a judge looks at that and goes, well, if I see it, it says it must, so it shouldn't be, but it's not listed in our DQ, so they can't do anything with it. So again, it's just a part of reading and looking at these words and what they mean. A tail longer than 4 inches is a fault. It doesn't say a tail longer than 4 inches is a fault. It says not to exceed 4 inches. We're just getting on that. So here are our serious faults in our breed standard. If you have a highlighter, you can highlight them. I actually have a copy of the standard at home, and I highlight the severe faults and the DQs through the standard on that. So this is what we call out in our standard as being serious and or severe. So what that tells judges and breeders is that our founders that wrote this as severe faults were concerned about this becoming an issue in our breed. One of the reasons breed standards get revised is for fads or issues that's come up. I think what Schnauzers or somebody just came up with a breed standard revision because some new coat color came in. They had to outlaw. Was it a gray or I don't know what it was? Silver?
No, it's white, gray, and black. They have this spot like a mer.
Okay, yeah. So that's why. And our breed standard started in the late 59 was the first one I found, breed standard. The modern one is about, IASCA is 72, but before that there were one. These are the areas they wanted us to stay away from. These are warning words as breeders on what could possibly go wrong. Okay, these are disqualifications. Funny that I couldn't find an adult dog with this DQ. Yeah, I know what you're saying. I got it. It came up yesterday. This is a DQ. That's a definite white body splash for any of you that have any questions on this. We normally in dogdom, even AKC doesn't truly define it, but there are, the St. Bernard standard clearly mentions it. I think one of the bully breeds clearly mentions, they say splash or spot. It's generally a circle. Here's our white fully surrounded by color. To be differentiated from a white belly extension, that's white from the belly coming up, white from the collar coming up, etc. This is different. It's an island of color, okay, on that. The other thing is, I have heard the story, as many of you probably have, of the exhibitor that got excused and won the argument because they said it only had one splash, not splashes. Let's be really clear here. I think it's very clear what our founders want, and it's a grammatical issue, not a message issue. So use some common sense on that. Okay, now this is crucial. An outstanding dog with a fault is still a great example of his breed that needs forgiveness in one area. A dog of balance and soundness, but no breed essence, is merely generic and a disaster to his breed. It's not easy to have the essence of the breed and have it be sound. If it was easy, we'd all be out there going best of breed or national specialty every year, one after another. It's not easy. So here we have a list of faults or flaws. Anybody have an idea of the difference between a fault and a flaw?
I don't know what does it mean, flaws, but now I check.
Get your dictionary up. I don't know what it means in Italian either.
Faults are something that you can't change, and flaws are something that you could, like the dog could lose weight.
Okay, what she said is faults something you can't change, flaws something you could alter, like weight. Anybody else have a definition of fault or flaw?
Maybe flaw is something maybe less important, like a small imperfection.
Perfect. Generally, when you study breed standards, a flaw would be considered that something that's cosmetic and doesn't affect form and function. So ear length, how many of us hate big ears? It's in our breed, we have it. We need to get rid of it. Does it truly affect a dog's ability to work stock? Does it detract from breed type? So you got a double whammy on that one. So we're gonna go down this list. Here's your overweight. Is that a flaw or a fault? Perfect. Wet, loose flues, flaw or fault? This is a difficult one. Anybody have any ideas on that contribution? There's no wrong answers or right answers here, guys. Trust me. It's sort of like the ear thing. A wet, loose flue gives us a look that detracts from breed type. But truly, can they still work stock? Okay. You're starting to understand where it becomes complex in this. Stifle white. Oh, this is a good one. Fault or flaw? How many breeders in here would not touch a dog with stifle white?
Not touch a dog.
Own one, breed one, keep it in a breeding program. There's nothing in the breed standard that talks about it, but it's smart of you to be aware of it as breeders. And I know this corner over here knows what it could do. I know you can have a dog like that, and if you're really clever, you can breed away from it, but it can come back to bite you in the butt when you least expect it on the best dog you've ever bred. Color issues are pretty detrimental. So would overreaching or overdriving side movement be a fault or a flaw?
It's a fault. It's a related to structure.
Yeah. Pretty severe in our breed, wouldn't you think? Because that's not going to work all day. It's unnecessary movement. It's a lack of movement on that. So keep in mind when you go through the standard, when you read it again, I went through 1 year and I'm a little anal. Okay, I know. You know, she's laughing. I had 4 different color markers, and one was for flaws, one was for faults. And I had this beautifully multicolored standard when I got done. It didn't help me.
Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk. I hope you've enjoyed this presentation from the United States Australian Shepherd Association National Specialty by Nanette Newberry. Petmate's tip of the week is keep your dog safe in your home and your home safe from your dog by crate training your puppy so he's happy, comfortably snoozing away while you run errands, pick up the kids from school, or even enjoy a date night. It's bad enough to come home to garbage strewn all over the house, but if your dog eats the wrong thing, his mayhem can turn deadly really fast. Check out Petmate's Plastic Kennels, a safe and secure home for your dog. Just click the link at www.puredogtalk.com/partners and use promo code PUREDOG for special savings only for you guys, Pure Dog Talk listeners. As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.